This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Massachusetts races to seat a new senator. Sarah Palin sprints to finish her memoir. And David Paterson insists he's still in the running for governor. It's Wednesday and time for another breathless edition with the Political Junkie.
There you go again.
When I hear your new ideas, I'm reminded of that ad. Where's the beef?
Extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice.
Senator, you're no Jack Kennedy.
You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore.
Lipstick.
But I'm the decider. Ah!
Every Wednesday, NPR political editor Ken Rudin joins us for a roundup of all things political. And what a week. Justice Sonia Sotomayor throws out the first pitch at Yankee Stadium. Former Virginia Governor Doug Wilder declines to endorse Democratic nominee Cree Deeds. And Rick Santorum heads to Iowa, the first step on a presidential campaign trail. In a few minutes, the long arm of the executive branch reaches all the way to Denver and the Democratic Senate primary. And California Republicans gather in Indian Wells for their annual convention. Later in the program, a roundup of opinion on the arrest of Roman Polanski 30 years after his conviction. Between the anger at either end of the spectrum, is there room for nuance in this debate? Email us now. The address is talk@npr.org. But first, political junkie Ken Rudin joins us here in Studio 3A. Hey, Ken.
Hi, Neil.
And as usual, we begin with a trivia question.
Well, you mentioned the California Republicans held their state convention this weekend in California in the desert. There are two California Republican women who were running for higher office this year. It's Carly Fiorina, who's hoping to run for the U.S. Senate against Barbara Boxer, and Meg Whitman, the former eBay executive running for governor, hoping to succeed Arnold Schwarzenegger. I have two trivia questions here. That means two prizes.
Uh-huh.
When was the last time a party nominated women for governor and the U.S. Senate in the same year, and when was the first time?
So if you think you know the first and most recent times a major party nominated female candidates for governor and Senate in the same year, give us a call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. You can get either or, a prize for each, but you got to tell us which one you're trying to answer. And again, 800-989-8255. Speaking of female governors, Sarah Palin, the former governor of Alaska, finished her memoir early.
Well, somebody finished it. I mean, obviously, she is working with a collaborator, Lynn Vincent, who is an editor at The World magazine and an evangelical Christian magazine. But obviously, they wanted to get the book. The book was supposed to come out next spring, and it's coming out November 17th. Coincidentally, 4 days after my birthday.
Really?
Yeah, very strange.
There's no such thing as a coincidence.
Right. But also coming out a month before Christmas, and they think that they ordered a million and a half copies, and they think it's going to be a real hot seller.
And they think that Sarah Palin and former Vice President Dick Cheney's daughter, Liz, are going to be the new faces of the Republican Party.
Well, there is a lot of dissension about Sarah Palin. Of course, there was a big article about Liz Cheney on the front page of the New York Times showing that she is in hot demand. She's, you know, the same kind of taunting of Barack Obama that Dick Cheney is very good at, mm-hmm. and Liz Cheney is showing that as well. But Sarah Palin, again, Republicans are mixed. There are people who just absolutely love her. They say she tells it like it is. She's just like us. And there are others who say, look, she's part of the so-called know-nothing wing of the Republican Party and that she is not the kind of person who could lead the party to the nomination or at least to victory in 2012.
Getting on to more upcoming elections. In Virginia, apparently the White House asked the former governor of Virginia, Doug Wilder, to go out and endorse the Democratic nominee to succeed him, and Governor Wilder declined.
This is vintage Douglas Wilder. Douglas Wilder, in 1989, became the first African-American governor elected anywhere in the country by the voters.
Since Reconstruction.
And this was 1989 in Virginia. But since then, he's had a prickly relationship with his fellow Democrats. He has to be wooed, and he has to be wined and dined, and sometimes he endorses them. But more often than not, he does not. 4 years ago, when Cree Deeds was running for state attorney general against the same Bob McDonnell who's running against him for governor, he refused to endorse him. So Doug Wilder was, they were pleased from Tim Kaine, who's the outgoing governor of Virginia and the chairman of the Democratic National Committee, and President Obama. But Wilder says, I'm staying neutral in this one.
Well, at least that's one where there's an accepted Democratic candidate in the White House gets involved. In New York State, as we talked about last week, David Paterson, the governor, apparently got a message from the White House, you can't win, you can't run. And he goes on TV and says, I'm running.
Now, of course, a lot of it has to do with party politics in New York. There is a budget that needs to be passed in New York. If David Paterson was a lame duck governor, perhaps he wouldn't have the sway that he may or may not have now. I mean, he's not in any kind of enviable position.
Not exactly a power broker. No.
But the White House did interfere in the New York Senate race with Kirsten Gillibrand and said, look, I want everybody else, meaning the White House, wants all the other Democrats to stay out of it. Carolyn Maloney, Steve Israel, members of Congress, wanted to challenge Gillibrand for the nomination. Gillibrand appointed to have Hillary Clinton's Senate seat.
By the aforementioned governor.
Exactly, by David Paterson. The White House really got involved in that, too. And the other candidates have stayed out of that one.
Interesting. And since we last spoke, what we expected to happen in Massachusetts did happen. Paul Kirk has been appointed to the seat to replace the late Senator Edward Kennedy. He's already been sworn in the Senate, may cast his first vote on the floor of the Senate today. And as he told reporters after his appointment was made by Governor Deval Patrick, he's going to keep the pledge that he'd been asked to make.
Just so you hear it from me, consistent with Senator Kennedy's wishes and the expectations of the governor and the legislators, I shall not be a candidate in the special election for the United States Senate in December or January.
In December, of course, is the Democratic and for that matter, Republican primary. The final election is in January, and that clears the way for, well, who's going to run?
Well, we already know that the two Democrats, it seems to be two major Democrats on the December 8th primary, Michael Capuano, who's a congressman, and the state attorney general, whose name just escapes me. She is
Mary?
No.
You're supposed to know this.
I know. State attorney general, but in the primary, and she's the only woman in the race, and she's run statewide, but it's already become ugly because Capuano was saying that unlike his attorney general, who doesn't have a name, he's a true successor to...
It's going to make name recognition very difficult.
I can't believe this happened to Ted Kennedy. But, you know, Paul Kirk, 71 years old, longtime ally and confidant of the Kennedy family, a very good choice. The Kennedy family, very excited about it. Vicky Kennedy and Kennedy's two sons also approved it.
And we have some people on the line who think they know the answer to this week's trivia question again.
The trivia question is, what is the name of the Attorney General of Massachusetts? Martha Coakley.
Martha Coakley.
Oh,
there you
boy.
Go. You're just dangling for another shirt. So the trivia question this week is the first and last times that a major political party nominated female candidates for governor and senator in the same election.
In the same state.
Right. 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. Jake is on the line from Kalamazoo.
Hey, I believe that the most recent time it happened was with Governor Jennifer Granholm and Senator Debbie Stabenow of Michigan.
And that was in 2006, and that was not the most recent time, but that's on my list of one of the times it's happened, and actually one of the few times when both candidates were elected. They were successful on both governor and senator, but not the most recent.
So, Jake, nice try, but no cigar, or no T-shirt,
no T-shirt.
In this case.
You can have
thanks very much. Let's see if we go next to, this is Bill. Bill with us from Bay Village in Ohio.
Oh, geez. Well, you know, that was actually going to be my guess, too, but I guess I got to come up with something in 2008, don't I?
It sounds like, for the most recent.
Oh, okay. Well, let's see. What about in Delaware, was it Ruth Ann Miner running for re-election against, and... In the Senate, I guess Joe Biden's opponent was, then I don't know who it was.
Well, stop immediately, because Ruth Ann Miner, who was a Democrat, and Joe Biden is a Democrat, so it had to be the same party nominating women.
Right.
So you do have Ruth Ann Miner, but not a Democrat for the Senate in Delaware.
Nice scramble, Bill. Good improvisation. Martha Ann Coakley would be proud of you.
Who?
Let's see. We go next to, this is Cecil. Cecil with us from Winston-Salem. Cecil, you got to turn off the radio and listen on the phone.
Yes, I'm on the phone.
Go ahead.
Okay, the most recent is in North Carolina with Governor Perdue and Hagan.
That is correct. In 2008, Kay Hagan was elected to the Senate, and Bev Perdue was elected to governor. That is the most recent time that two women, same state, same party, both Democrats, were nominated for office. Actually, they both were elected as well. So that is correct. That's the one answer we were looking for, the most recent, and that's North Carolina 2008.
So, Cecil, you're the proud winner of a fabulous no-prize T-shirt. I'm going to put you on hold, and we'll get your information, and you have to promise to take a digital picture and email it to us so we can add it to our wall of shame.
Okay, thanks.
All right, hold on. And we have an email question, a response to the first time, and this from LN in Richmond, California. California in 1994 was the time that women were nominated for both U.S. Senator and Governor, Dianne Feinstein for Senate, and Kathleen Brown for Governor.
That was the first time ever. That person is correct. June 7th, 1994. And the only reason I mentioned June 7th, because on June 14th, 1994, in Maine, Susan Collins was nominated for Governor. Olympia Snowe was nominated for Senate. So California wins the record by 1 week.
We'll get returned by email to L.N. Dolbear. We hope he or she will send us a digital picture to add to our world
and
of shame.
We'll email them the T-shirt.
And anyway, one other thing we should mention. In the Bronx last Saturday, New York Yankee catcher Jorge Posada took Sonia Sotomayor by the elbow and escorted the new Supreme Court justice to the front of the pitcher's mound at Yankee Stadium. Dressed in a pinstripe uniform shirt, Sotomayor surprised many of her critics when she came set as a right-hander. Waved to the crowd, and here's the pitch. A big breaking ball that dropped into the glove of Jose Molina on the fly, and the Bronx natives' beloved Yankees then went on to sweep all three games from the Boston Red Sox to clinch first place in the American League East.
Conservatives fear that that's the only thing she'll ever do righty, but that was a great moment.
Yeah, the great moment for Sonia Sotomayor, who grew up just blocks in the shadows of Yankee Stadium.
I did too, by the way.
Did you?
And I was not nominated to the Supreme Court.
Not yet.
No, but it's early.
We're talking with Ken Rudin, the political junkie. Up next, the White House plays favorites in Colorado's Democratic Senate primary, and California Republicans eye 2010 for a comeback. Ken mentioned they were in the desert, metaphorically or physically. We'll find out. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Yeah, I'll make you glad you got me in with everything I do. And I'll defend until the end the old red, white, and blue. I want to grow up to be a politician.
This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Political junkie Ken Rudin is with us, as he is every Wednesday. You can also get your fix online. Ken blogs at npr.org. You can also go to that same website. And conspiracy theorist Ken collaborates with Ron Elving every week on a podcast called It's All Politics, so you're going to want to get that. We're going to head out to California in a moment, where Republicans see opportunity ahead in 2010. But first to Colorado, when President Obama appointed Ken Salazar to head the Department of the Interior, Colorado's governor named Michael Bennett, the head of Denver Public Schools, to replace Salazar in the Senate. It was supposed to be a smooth transition, but the election for that seat is in 2010, and Michael Bennett is not a shoo-in. The Democratic Party is deeply divided, and now the White House has gotten involved. If you're a Democrat living in Colorado, whom do you plan to support, and why should the White House be playing referee in this contest? 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. Lynn Bartels reports on politics for the Denver Post and joins us now by phone from her office in Denver. Nice to have you with us on Talk of the Nation.
No, thanks so much for having me.
And the Post reported there that the Speaker of the Colorado House has announced he's going to run against Bennett in the Democratic primary, despite job offers elsewhere.
Yes, including the White House.
Yeah. So the White House offered him jobs in the hopes that he would not run against Senator Bennett?
That's the talk. That's what sources have told us, and more than one, that the White House, very late, when they realized that Andrew Romanoff was serious about getting in the race, made some overtures. Andrew loves foreign policy, has been to Africa before, and offered him some jobs. And supposedly he said, no, I'm going to run, and he turned him down.
And so that has raised some ire among Democrats in the state.
Well, it raised ire, obviously, among the Romanoff backers. I don't think it raised any ire among the Bennett supporters. I mean, the one thing you have to realize is that when you say the White House, you also have to say Barack Obama here. Michael Bennett was an early supporter of Barack Obama. We're talking 2007. I mean, he maxed out his donations to Barack Obama in March of 2007, when a number of other Coloradans here, including Romanoff, lined up behind Hillary Clinton or had not made a decision yet. So he was a key advisor to Barack Obama in education, and they have a personal relationship. So this isn't just the White House wanting Senator Bennett. I think it's Barack Obama wanting his friend Michael Bennett.
Ken?
Lynn, Andrew Romanoff obviously challenging Michael Bennett in the primary. What's the issues involved here other than Romanoff's ambition?
Well, that's what people say. I don't see what the difference is between them. They're both pretty much Denver, you know. Neither of them actually is a liberal. That's what's kind of interesting. When Romanoff led the legislature, he stood up to the union, sometimes to their chagrin. So did Michael Bennett at Denver Public Schools. So they're a lot the same. In fact, Democrats will say, what's the difference between them? But Romanoff lobbied very hard to be named senator. He thought he should have gotten the job. And, of course, he's for 7-6 months, whatever. People said, you should have been appointed. And I think he finally believed it and said, why not give the people a choice?
Mm-hmm. Or why not run against the governor who didn't appoint him?
Well, that's what he actually had made calls on that. That's what's interesting. Romanoff had called various Democrats and said, I'm thinking of running against the governor. Now, one rumor has it that he saw a poll and thought Bennett was easier to beat. Other rumors have it that he sat down and said, yeah, but the job I really wanted was senator, not governor, so I'm going to go back and go after the job that really appealed to me in the first place.
Well, let's get some listeners in the conversation. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. We'll start with Will. Will calling us from Denver.
Yes, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I voted for President Obama, and I respect man, but I also respect the people here in Denver and Colorado having the right to pick who they want to choose. I don't think Senator Bennett is qualified to be a senator. I think he's very good in education, but I think that the White House should stay out of it and just let the people of Colorado decide.
Would you prefer Mr. Romanoff?
You know, really, as your speaker said, there's not a whole lot of difference between the two of them as far as being a Democrat. Mr. Romanoff has proven himself working in the state legislature. And again, Mr. Bennett's expertise, other than being a friend of the president, is in education. So I suppose on that level, I probably would vote for Mr. Romanoff.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Was part of the calculation, Lynn Bartels, Mr. Bennett would have an easier run to election if he did not have an opponent in the Democratic primary?
Well, sure. In fact, nobody dreamt that the Democrat would be primaried. How often do you primary an incumbent? Not that often. The irony in this case is that the Republicans in their primary are kind of having the same war. Jane Norton, the former lieutenant governor, is perceived to be the Washington favorite. John McCain's made calls on her behalf. The National Republican Senatorial Group registered domain names on her behalf. And the party activists went nuts saying, let us run our own elections and keep Washington out of it. The bad word here is always Washington.
Why is that? Ken and I both work in this town.
Well, because it's the West, and Washington is kind of perceived as the place that tells you what to do but doesn't really know what's going on out here. Makes rules about water or minerals but doesn't understand a thing about them.
The same kind of resentment exists just beyond the Beltway in Maryland and Virginia as well, so it's not peculiar. Those issues peculiar to Colorado and other parts of the West, but the contempt for Washington, D.C. Is, I think, universal. Let's get another caller on the line. This is Chris, another caller from Denver.
Oh, well, thank you so much for taking my call.
Go ahead.
Well, I'm just a voter in Denver, and I am an educator, but I'm not very impressed with Bennett at all. I feel like that he just hasn't done very much to court my vote and hasn't really been around, whereas I've seen Romanoff speak, and I'm very impressed with him. I think that he's a young and charismatic leader. He's done an excellent job in passing issues that are important to me at the state legislature, not the least of which is selling alcohol on Sunday, which is not a big deal, but,
mm-hmm.
but he's been a really great leader, and I really hope that Romanoff's able to pull it out, and even as an educator, I really would prefer Romanoff in my Senate seat than Bennett.
And so the issue, as far as you see it, is leadership.
It's leadership, and it's also charisma and electability, visibility. I mean, Romanoff is just an incredible speaker. He reminds me of Barack Obama or Bill Clinton. And his ability to inspire people and his ability to really lead.
Lynn Bartels, is there a difference between these two Democrats?
Well, I thought it was interesting because he said young, and Bennett and Romanoff are practically the same age. I think it's 43 and 44. But I will say this. I mean, you know, I remember, you know, I was at Andrew's speeches, and I've covered Andrew in the legislature, and people will come up to me and they always go, oh, Bartels, do you believe what a good speaker, I mean speaker in the lowercase there. That is a huge difference, and that caller touched on that. I think Romanoff is incredibly charismatic. He's also almost like drop-dead laughing funny when he wants to be.
Hmm.
And so he was, you know, so he's, you know, he's, I think in some ways he's much more charismatic than Michael Bennett. But once you get to know Michael Bennett, he's very personable. He's all that. But I think on that surface of just meeting people, the other thing is, excuse me, Romanoff is everywhere, in part because Romanoff's not really had, he's taught some this year, but in the entire time I've known him, the legislature has been his full-time job. I mean, Bennett was the school superintendent, then he works the cities. Right now, Bennett's trying to balance being in the Senate while on the weekends campaigning and going out everywhere. Romanoff's available 24/7. Hmm. You want him to come speak to your 4-H group, there he is.
I'm just amazed that Ken has not used the word dynasty yet. Chris, thanks very much for the phone call. Let's get one more caller in on this. This is Steve. Steve with us in Boulder.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Hi.
I'm a reporter. I'm from Boulder, and I was reporting on a story for Colorado Biz magazine, and I interviewed Michael Bennett and found him to be intelligent and personable and extremely qualified. And I, you know, in his position in the Senate, if you can get along in at the Denver schools, you're going to do fine, I think, in Washington, because it's extremely political.
So you think Bennett is the better of the two?
Well, to be honest, I don't know. I don't know Andrew Romanoff, but I have met Michael Bennett, and I thought he was excellent.
All right, Steve. Thanks very much for the call. Ken?
I think one, perhaps the bigger issue here is the fact that whether the White House has the right to interfere in primaries, and of course they do, just as Karl Rove did it with the Bush administration. The Democrats, the White House needs to find out who will be the stronger candidates, the better candidates, to keep their seats in 2010, and that's why they get involved in states like Colorado and New York and Pennsylvania.
And we'll have to see how it works out. Lynn Bartels, we may be checking back in with you.
All right. Thank you.
Lynn Bartels, a reporter for the Denver Post, with us by phone from her office in Denver. Last weekend, the California Republican Party had its annual convention in Indian Wells. Republican voters heard from Meg Whitman and Steve Poynzer, and who are running for the party's nomination for governor. Scott Schaefer is host of the California Report, a show on KQED, our member station in San Francisco. He was in Indian Wells for the California Republican Convention. He joins us now from the studios at KQED. Good to have you with us today.
Good to be with you, Neil.
And we want to hear from Republicans in California. How is 2010 shaping up for your party? 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. And why don't we start with the race for governor? And the Republicans appeared there. And, well, I guess Meg Whitman came in as the front runner.
Well, she did. She is the former eBay CEO and has a lot of money. She is very wealthy. She's already spent $19 million on her campaign and said she'll spend whatever it takes to win. But she has a problem that really highlighted itself during the course of the convention this past weekend. She had said in the past that she'd missed voting in a few elections, and there was a Sacramento Bee article, an investigative story that came out just as the convention was opening, saying that she didn't just miss a few elections. She had failed to register to vote for 28 years, and that she hadn't registered until 2002, and had skipped some elections after that. So
oops.
Steve Poynzer, yeah, oops. So her opponent, California Insurance Commissioner Steve Poynzer, one of the other Republicans running, pounced on that, called on her to drop out of the race, and is up on TV with a commercial attacking her for that. So it remains to be seen whether that'll be a problem within the Republican primary for her, but as voters are just getting to know her, it's a piece of information that may get some attention. I don't want to forget the third leading candidate here, Tom Campbell, former congressman, former state senator, budget director under Arnold Schwarzenegger. He's also running, and running fairly well in the polls, one or two in most polls, so can't forget about him.
Well, getting back to Meg Whitman for just a moment, there was an awkward moment at a news conference where reporters pressed her on, well, yeah, you've said you didn't vote and that it was a bad thing and you regret it. They kept pressing her on why.
What I have said is it was not the right thing to do.
But why?
Why? it just wasn't the right thing to
do. That doesn't answer the question.
I should have, and I didn't.
And she kept coming back to that same answer.
She did, and I was sitting in the front row just a few feet from her. And she, you know, I think this could be the case of a CEO who has been in charge and has been busy giving orders and delegating things. And suddenly she's got to not only answer questions, but she has to explain herself. And mm-hmm. she wasn't really very eager to do that.
We're talking with Scott Schaefer, host of the California Report at KQED, about the Republican convention this past week in California. You're listening to Talk of the Nation and the Political Junkie from NPR News. And, Scott, the other part of it was apparently her speech to the convention was, less than Reagan-esque.
It was. There were no Reagan-esque speeches, including the one from the current governor, Arnold Schwarzenegger. It was long. It was sort of a recitation of ideas, a lot of which had been heard before. And so I think she may have been thinking ahead to the next hour when she gave that speech, because she knew she was going to give a press conference and that she was going to get grilled over her voting record. But she did seem a little distracted. It was sort of low key. People like her. They think she has a good chance to win in 2010 if she gets the nomination. But there were no, you know, sort of standing ovations and pumping of fists and that sort of thing.
Ken?
Scott, with the economy being obviously the big issue in California, some Republicans felt that by picking a Meg Whitman for governor and Carly Fiorina for the Senate, business-oriented Republican candidates are the way to go. But there is, after all these years of Schwarzenegger and the budget deficits, there is pent-up anger among conservatives, and they don't feel that Whitman or Fiorina are one of them.
They don't, and they certainly don't feel Arnold Schwarzenegger is one of them. One of the most striking things about the weekend was just how much, almost a sense of betrayal and anger there is at Schwarzenegger, even though he's one of the few Republicans who's won statewide office in the past 20 years. And so there is a concern. I think there's kind of almost a grand compromise, Ken, that they're going to set aside some of these more divisive cultural issues like abortion and gay rights and gun owner rights for now and try to unite around things like lower taxes, smaller government, things that the Republicans can agree on. But at the same time, as you say, there is some real doubt that Fiorina, Whitman, and for that matter, Steve Poizner and Tom Campbell are really one of them when it comes to these core principles. And I should point out, this is a really unusual set of candidates, because not only the Republicans, but all of the Democrats all come from the San Francisco Bay Area. And there's no serious major party candidate from Los Angeles. And there isn't likely to be either. And it's very unusual.
We talked about the governor's side. As mentioned, Carly Fiorina is given, I guess, the nod in the Senate race. Does she face opposition?
She does. She's facing opposition from Chuck DeVore, who is a Republican state senator. Carly Fiorina wasn't there this weekend. She had been diagnosed with breast cancer, and her staff told me she was not there because she was undergoing some final rounds of chemotherapy, so no one was criticizing her for not being there. She also has some problems. You may recall she was fired from Hewlett-Packard. She was also fired from the McCain campaign, more or less, as a volunteer advisor when she said that John McCain wasn't qualified to be a corporate CEO. That was the last time we heard from her in 2008. So, but nonetheless, it would be appealing, they say, to have a woman running against Barbara Boxer, the incumbent Democrat, who's often seen as being somewhat weak, although she continually knocks off the Republicans that she faces in the general election. But yes, Chuck DeVore, a well-regarded Republican leader in the legislature, is running in that primary as well.
And as you mentioned, at least the Democrats are united on their Senate candidate. We just have a minute left, but a little chaos still on the gubernatorial side for the Democrats.
Well, yeah, Jerry Brown has been assumed to be a candidate this week. He finally took out papers to form an exploratory committee. He'll be joining Gavin Newsom, the mayor of San Francisco, who is very much running. Jerry Brown leads in all the polls. He leads Gavin Newsom by a healthy amount on the Democratic side. And a poll out this week from Rasmussen shows that he leads all the Republicans as well in a matchup. But as Ken well knows, these polls mean very little this far out.
This far out, indeed, and still far out from the primaries, much less the general. Scott Schaefer, thanks very much for your time today.
Good to be with you.
Scott Schaefer joined us from the studios of KQED, our member station in San Francisco, where he hosts the California Report. Coming up, first, I think we have to say thank you to political junkie Ken Rudin, who joins us here every Wednesday on Talk of the Nation. Ken, always appreciate your time.
Thanks, Neil.
Coming up, the arrest of Roman Polanski. Many argue that 30 years later, this is petty and vindictive. To others, this is justice delayed. Between the anger at either end of the spectrum, is there room for nuance in this debate? Give us a call 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.